It is season 2 of the Drew Buzney Show on WRUC 89.7. Welcome back for another great year of talking about Boston sports, about life, about my opinions on everything. Of course, my name is Drew Buzney. I am pleased to be back with everyone who listens to my show for another great academic year. We have moved times. We're now Thursdays at 10 a.m. Instead of hitting the afternoon rush, we hit the morning rush of people driving into work, bored with whatever they're doing and want to listen to me. Another reminder that this show is live right now on WRUC 89.7, the first station in the nation. But we will be on Spotify and Apple Music again this year, coming soon. Today on the agenda, we talk about the Patriots, their 1-2 start. Celtics training camp opened yesterday. The Red Sox were eliminated from playoff contention yesterday. And the President's Cup starts today. All that next on Season 2 of The Drew Buzney Show. And welcome back. Of course, like we do on this show most of the time, we always start with the Patriots. And I know I'm a little late to the party with my show and everything. There's already been 3 games, but that doesn't mean I still can't give my opinion on what's been going on. And the initial thoughts I get, and I've heard this a lot from my family members, is the pass protection. And every question around the Patriots right now is revolving around, when is Drake May going to start? Is it going to be week 4? Is it not going to be at all? Is it going to be halfway through the season? Or is he just going to do what he did against the Jets, and he's going to go in when Jacoby Brissett gets absolutely demolished? Well, he gets absolutely demolished because he has no offensive line. Swiss cheese could pass protect better than the Patriots' offensive line right now. It's probably the worst in the NFL. So why are you putting what you hope to be your generational quarterback? And I know we said that about Mac Jones, and that just utterly failed. But I believe Drake May is a better prospect, more of a raw prospect coming out of college. He's also younger than Mac Jones was. So the Patriots are at more of a clean slate with Drake May. There's a more of an upside with him and his potential and what he can bring to the Patriots organization. So why are you putting behind a Swiss cheese of an offensive line when he's just going to get hit? A lot of times you see these generational quarterbacks who get drafted to these terrible teams, and they're gone after 2 years because their confidence broke. Because instead of being able to like get the fundamentals down of throwing to the slant or throwing the deep post or hand the ball off and getting the game speed that's required in the NFL that's much faster than college, instead they just get hit after hit after hit. Because 9 times out of 10 in this league, when you're a bad team, it's mostly because of your offensive line. And so all these teams that have terrible records that get top picks at bad offensive lines, and then they put in their rookie quarterback who has no choice but to play because their team needs something, but they have a bad O-line, so they get wrecked. You saw that a lot with a lot of the Browns quarterbacks when they would draft with the first pick, and then their quarterback would be done after, 2 years. So I think, my opinion at least, is you let Jacoby Brissett ruin his career as the Patriots started, because if he can get through this year without getting hurt based on what the offensive line has been doing right now, then that's a miracle. Because you can tell every time he gets hit how much pain he is in. Because the TV camera zooms up on him and you see him clenching, you see him, oh, that hurts. His pads are all discombobulated. And every time I think Drake May is going to go in, and my heart pounds more and I'm excited to see Drake May play, but for the down-the-road feeling and the future of this team, I shouldn't be excited that Jacoby Brissett is getting killed. Because if Jacoby Brissett's getting killed and it's a blowout game, then no one's really going to try, or it's just not going to go well, and they're going to put Drake May in and he's going to get even more clobbered. You saw that. The first play Drake May played against the Jets last Thursday, he got destroyed. He got like picked up and threw down on the ground. It was absurd. And I'm just not ready to put Drake May in that position yet. Once we get a better O-line, then yes, Drake May can start, but he needs that protection before he can develop his other fundamentals, the throwing mechanics, the footwork, the speed that the NFL requires quarterbacks to be at. In addition to that, if you notice, Alex Van Pelt's offense is very run-based. It's very heavy. It's very take Ramondre Stevenson in or Antonio Gibson and just pound him down the middle. Pound, pound, pound. Run, 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 run. And it was so weird last Thursday's. There were no runs. It was pass, play action, play action, play action, or pass, or pass, or pass. And it just went against the fundamentals. Because the first two games, yes, we're 1-1, but we were close. I mean, we'll get to it in a little bit later, but we should have been 0-2 after two games. But we've been a competitive team. And for a team that really had no aspirations for the season, where no one really thought they were going to do anything, that's really all you can ask for. But at this point in the Patriots' career and their organization, their timeline is, I'm happy being competitive. It makes the game so much better to watch. Even though Patriots football is like not that fun to watch, but at least it comes down to the last 2 minutes or overtime or whatever. But the only way to get better and maybe get an offensive lineman or get a wide receiver or do something that can further help this team, because the team has shown no willingness to add in the offseason. That we needed a high pick, and I'm fine with getting Travis Hunter because he's a good wide receiver. He could help, but there are a lot of good offensive linemen out there, and that is who I think we need to make this team good. I think Ramondre Stevenson is a stellar running back, and I think we have an above-average wide receiver class. I know they do struggle to get open sometimes, but I think if you look at the stat sheet and them only having 20-odd yards or not a lot of yards in general, I think it's the pass protection. I think that's the root cause. I think Jacoby Brissett or whoever our quarterback is has no time that the wide receivers don't have enough time to get open. And when Jacoby Brissett needs to throw it after 0.5 seconds because that's when the defensive linemen are there, there's no one open because our wide receivers are good, but none of them have the skill to get open that quick. So I think they're above average. I think with a good quarterback that the above average wide receiver can look good. But with all teams, if you look at all the good teams, they still have that one star. You really need that one star than the one above average player. So we have the above average. We just need the star. And my eye right now is maybe on Ja'Marr Chase because of his situation in Cincinnati. But again, if you draft Travis Hunter, then that becomes your star. So that serves that problem. So I think our first two picks need to be wide receiver or offensive lineman. And I would love to get Travis Hunter. I think he's, to be a little bit selfish, but I think he's a generational talent. But I think it has to be mostly an all offensive lineman draft. Because I think our defense is good. I think the defense struggled against the Jets, mainly just because our top four defenders were out. And no team is ever going to be good when your top four defenders are out. You can say that for the Jets. You can say that for the Browns. You can say that for the best defense in the league. And we were playing scrubs. That's where we were playing backups. And backups on the Patriots are people who are cut on other teams. So from the get-go, when our backups are in, we're not going to be good. And I've heard this a lot, not to take down my college, but I was listening to a professor speak, and he said, our school rivals the best. Our best students rival the best students at other small schools, but our worst students are much worse than those schools. And I think that applies to the Patriots. I think the Patriots' best players, mostly on defense and running backs, they compare to some of the really good players in the NFL. But if you look at our backups and our players that are lower on the depth chart, our worst players are far worse than the worst players on the good teams in the NFL, if that makes sense. And so I think that's the situation we are in, where we just need more superstars. We need that superstar. We had Tom Brady. He was our superstar. The Texans have a whole load of them. C.J. Stroud, Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, Joe Mixon, Will Anderson. They have superstars on their team. When I asked about the Patriots superstars, I think of, when I thought of Christian Barmore, I think of Keon White, I think of Juwan Bentley, Jabril Preppers. I think of players, but if you're going to compare the superstars, ours do not equate to the Texans ones or the other teams that are good. And it just comes down to building this roster to a championship mindset. And whether that's making aggressive trades and maybe getting rid of the young guys for an older superstar, maybe I'm okay with that. Because superstars also attract players. If you look at Tom Brady, no offense to anyone who lives in Foxborough, but I don't think Foxborough is the most attractive place to play. It's not really in Boston. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. And yes, you have Boston near you, but it's not like you're in the heart of the city. But people came to the Patriots and wanted to come play for the Patriots because of Tom Brady. So there's no appealing factor for the Patriots right now. And once you get that superstar, or maybe Drake May becomes this amazing quarterback, then maybe Patriots become a destination people want to go to again. But in order to get Drake May to be that superstar factor, it comes down to the offensive line and a better wide receiver. So it's stepping stones. And because there's so many stepping stones to overcome, that's why I'm worried about Drake May getting in there. Because once these factors come in line, the offensive line and the wide receivers, then you're going to need Drake May to be at his best. And when all these things come to fruition and Drake May's not at his best, then everything they've worked towards is nullified. And it doesn't matter anymore. You have to go through the whole process of players are going to leave, we're going to have a bad team, we're going to have to draft a quarterback, and this whole thing is going to go over again. So, I think, my opinion, and I'm going to stand now, I'm going to hold on to it, no matter what happens with Jacoby Brissett, Drake May should not start. I don't think it's beneficial for this team or for him to go in there and get absolutely destroyed and ruin his future. I think the future of him is so much brighter than you can't ruin it in the present. So my opinion is no. Sit him. I think watching is valuable. Yes, you can't play, but being able to see how the game works from the sideline, from a coach's perspective, from the play calling perspective, to the watching film of the game, and just focusing on the process of the game, I think if you get done down that, then you're good. And Tom Brady said it. It's the development. Development matters. You can't throw a quarterback in and expect him to be amazing. Yes, there are some that work. We're seeing it right now with C.J. Stroud and Jaden Daniels. But that's not the majority. You look at the whole Browns organization. They were not able to develop, and that's why they went through, whatever, 20 quarterbacks in 10 years, whatever that number is. And so Jacoby being a warrior, getting hit, good for him. That's what we need. We kind of need him to be a sacrificial lamb in the sense that he's only in there to help Drake May through the process and through practice and put him in the game schedule. And he's been making the games competitive, and that's all you can ask for. But at the end of the day, we need to lose. We need another high draft pick. That's what works. We need another high draft pick, and Robert Kraft actually needs to show us that he's behind this team and is going to put money forward. And so once I see those things, I'm happy to put Drake May in, but the founding blocks are not there yet. I also believe there are some coaching problems. I think there were some errors in the Seahawks game where we had the chance to close it out. We had some clock mismanagement. We had some missed calls, maybe a missed challenge, and I think that, in addition to, I felt the team was not ready for Thursday Night Football coming off a short week. I thought that was on the coaching. I think Jerod Mayo also needs to step it up. I think that when there's a rookie head coach, maybe a rookie quarterback, there's too much leniency. Like, they're the head coach. Whether they're the rookie or they're not, they're in charge of the team. And if they mess up, it's still their fault. I think if a 10-year head coach messes up, I think it's still as bad as if a rookie coach messes up. And I don't care that Jerod Mayo is a rookie. You can't be making these mistakes, because if the coaches are going to lose you the game, then who cares what players you're putting on the field? Because you could put me and 11 clones of me on offense and defense, and we would still lose. But I would rather lose because of the players than of the coaches, because the coaches never are even giving a shot for the players to win, and I think that's infuriating. Moving on to the Celtics today on our show. Celtics training camp opened yesterday with Kristaps Porzingis not in it, and Jason Tatum having a new shooting motion. I don't know if you remember last year, but there was kind of a hitch. He would take his hands up. They would kind of go backwards and flick forwards. It's kind of a smoother, quicker motion. And He struggled with it in the playoffs with three-point shooting, so hopefully he comes back more improved. And I don't really know what else to say about the Celtics right now. I need to hear more coming from training camp, but I think winning this championship this past season, I think it only is going to free up Brown and Tatum, because for years this weight was on their shoulder. When they had Kyrie, when it was Kemba, when it was just them, that this weight was that they have to win Banner 18. For 5 years it was the Celtics need to win Banner 18. It's a failure if they don't win Banner 18. It's true. And year after year after year they would come up short. And that took a toll on them. And now that this weight is gone, it's true, they're free. They have no more weight on their shoulder, literally. And hopefully this freedom will let them play better. And I think now they know how to get it all. They know the process. And I hate it. I hate all the media still saying that they were not worthy championships, that they had an easy path to the playoffs. But whether it was or was not, the Celtics won. They got the one seed. And whatever happened around them happened. Like, the Pacers won. They made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Just because the Celtics also made it there, like, they didn't choose their opponent. Their opponent was chosen through all the other teams in the playoffs. Other teams could have beat the Pacers to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, but other teams didn't. The Pacers won. They were worthy to be in the Eastern Conference Finals, whatever happened, and the Celtics were too. They won their way there. And I think these excuses that they played bad teams and they played injured teams are, frankly, BS. Because these bad teams, whether injured or not, they fought their way to the playoffs to play the Celtics. And if hurt teams didn't want to play the Celtics, then you should have forfeited. And you should have got out in the first round or tried not to make the playoffs. And so I think this media narrative around the Celtics still is totally absurd. I think I'm fine with they don't get their credit because maybe it's a chip on their shoulder, but no one's ready to validate the Celtics, and it's kind of infuriating because they are the best team in the league. I am worried, though, of the hangover effect. Most of our starters played every game in the playoffs and then went to go play in the Olympics, and albeit, you know, Tatum didn't really play in the Olympics with that benching. White didn't play, but Drew played a lot. But I think it would be smart if Mazzulla kind of limited their minutes in the first half of the season, because I talk about this with my dad, who, by the way, is a basketball genius. Basketball genius. He knows everything about Boston sports. He's like the expert. It's where I get all my knowledge from, is from him. But the expert, as I'm going to call him now, basically told me year after year that the regular season doesn't matter. It's the playoffs that matter. And if you come in with a little less record and you're the 2 seed, I think the Celtics are a good enough team to win on the road. We showed it last year where we won every game on the road except for one. That I think we should have to get by in the regular season. So, if, I don't know, let's say hypothetically Tatum averaged 30 minutes in the regular season last year. If he starts the first half of the season at 23-24, I think that's fine, because I think fatigue matters and I think rest matters, and he's been playing all summer. So I would not be opposed to seeing him play a little less. And plus, we have good backups. Like, Peyton Pritchard's not bad. Luke Kornet's average. Like, Lonnie Walker can make a name for himself. Sam Hauser's good. I'm not afraid to rely more on the people that are not our starting five. So if the Celtics come out in the first 30 games, 40 games, are, you know, we're seeing less of Tatum Brown and that kind of ramps up, I am okay with that. Because I think at the end of the day, being ready for the playoffs matters far more than anything else. The regular season doesn't really matter when you're a team like the Celtics. And so I'm just worried that our team's going to go out there, Mazzulla's going to play him a million minutes a game, and we're just going to be kind of dead energy by the end of the year. So that's a monitoring item to look at. The Red Sox are done for. They were eliminated last night from postseason contention. And it's the same story it is the past off seasons. It's, we need a superstar, like the Patriots. We need a superstar. We need pitching. We need pitching. We need hitting. We need everything. And there's really two routes I see looking at this. You can go out and you can spend your money, which frankly we all know John Henry's never going to do. So that route is kind of off limits unless something magic happens and John Henry falls into his head and is like, oh, I'm actually going to spend my money right now. But he's a baby and he won't. The other option is, I like to compare it to the Arizona Diamondbacks, who, if you don't remember, made it to the World Series last year. They lost to the Rangers, but their whole team is filled with their AAA prospects. And if you don't know, the Red Sox have a lot of good prospects coming down the pipeline. So it's kind of what Craig Breslow said at the beginning of the year, the development thing. and I was pissed about it then, and I'm still mad about it, but it's the best option when your owner's not willing to spend money. It's just a waiting game, but it's hard to keep the players around there because we don't have 9 prospects. We don't have a best prospect in every position, so we can't rush a development, but I'm worried that if their development's going to take 2-3 more years, then the likes of Rafi Devers, Trevor Story, all our pitchers are going to not want to stick around for that, and they're going to leave. So that by the time our development players come up, we're not going to have a team around them, and we're just going to have to add and add and add, and we're never going to become a complete team with 9 batters and a pitcher that can win us a game. And so I'm just worried that how we're on this one path of only straight development, I just don't think it's a recipe for success. I'm fine if we go with 80% development, but there still needs to be some spending out there to kind of complete the circle, if that makes sense. Is our prospects are only 3-4 positions. We need 5-6 other more. So whether it's an 80-20 ratio, 70-30 ratio, again, that'll be in favor of the development. That needs to happen, and they need to show the fans and make the fans interested that they care about the season and get Fenway Park back to the full stadium it was. Before I reach our last section of the day, this is your reminder that you are listening to WRUC 89.7, the first station in the nation, live from beautiful Union College in Schenectady, New York. Right now it is just pouring out, but who cares? You're listening to the Drew Buzny Show, back for its season 2 for the whole year. And we get to our last episode today, bringing back golf with the President's Cup coming up, starting at 11:30 on this beautiful Tuesday. First group out, group out at exactly 11:35. Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele versus Byung-Hun An and Jason Day. Scottie Scheffler playing with Russell Henley in that middle group against Sungjae Im and Tom Kim. And I'm just going to flat out say it. The Ryder Cup is great. There's energy there that you don't see on a daily tournament, but it's not the Ryder Cup. Because at least the Europeans give the United States a run for their money. And after watching the President's Cup 2 years ago, and it's a very similar team, I think that the international players are not as good. I think they're less known. When you look at them on the PGA Tour, they're always less up there, and I think the U.S. is going to run away with it. I think it's not going to really be close. I think that's my opinion. I mean, I thought the U.S. were going to win the Ryder Cup, and they got absolutely destroyed. But I think the U.S. is going to win. I don't think the international team really can put up a fight. And it's interesting that there's no LIV guys, and I believe because it's a PGA Tour event that there's no LIV guys, but I would have loved to see the LIV guys and the PGA Tour guys again, and you can see in the Ryder Cup, and you saw that in the Olympics a little bit, I believe. And it's just like this dynamic is back that, you know, the world of golf has returned to us, and it just, golf is so much more enjoyable to watch when all the best players are together. But I was watching the LIV Golf Team Championships, and if you don't know, they play about 12 tournaments to determine the individual rankings, and, you know, kind of like a normal golf tournament. The last tournament is match play. It's kind of like the Ryder Cup, but instead of U.S. versus Europe, it's just all the LIV teams against each other into like a tournament almost. And it was amazing to watch because, again, the emotion came out. And when you can see this emotion on the golf course, it's amazing. That's why I love the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup. That's why I think those are the two best tournaments that exist in pro golf. But we're just missing the continuity, the cohesiveness that we used to have in the golf game with the LIV players and the PGA Tour players. And I think we've been hearing about this merger forever, and we need it. We need it back. And it's just becoming frustrating that I can't sit down in front of the TV and have one channel open and watch the best golfers in the world. And there has to be some sort of solution. I don't really know what it is because obviously the best brains in the world can't figure it out. So that means how the hell am I supposed to figure it out? But I guess we'll see what the future holds in pro golf. I'm hoping that the 2025 season is the last of this split because I hope the merger is done by 2026. I feel like that's the rumors I've heard. And I kind of want it to be maybe a mix of team events and individual events. Or this idea that maybe it's every man for themselves. Maybe it's not really a team event. Maybe it's the idea. Maybe it's, I don't know, I'm kind of at a loss to describe this, but the PGA Tour has the FedEx Cup standings, which are their individual standings. So does LIV. So I think that part is good. I think you can have this individual standings where if you win, you get this amount of points. And I like the drop zone. I think that's cool. It's kind of Formula One-esque. But I think that's a sitting between both leagues. Maybe there's a way to spice it up a little bit with the individual standings. I'm not a big fan of the shotgun because I think courses are made to be played from 1 to 18. I think it tells a story. And, you know, there's a reason you always start the first one at 18. So I will get rid of the shotguns in this new league. But I don't really know what to do about the team aspect of it. Because I think the team championship is really cool. I think it brings about the energy in a whole new way. But maybe the way it works is maybe you have your individual events and maybe you have like an off week or something, or who knows, maybe it's a Thursday or a Wednesday, maybe it's a Wednesday and two teams play. So all the players are on the PGA Tour and they're split into 20 teams. And it's kind of like the in-season tournament where instead of playing a regular season game or a regular tournament, it's like a team event. So we'll use an example. Let's say you have the RBC Heritage. That's your individual event where it's just straight up stroke play. And the event after that, I forget, maybe it's the Charles Schwab Challenge. And instead of the Charles Schwab Challenge being the individual stroke play it normally is, it's the teams. And not only is there the season record of the individual, but maybe there's 19 matches. So you play every team once. It's a lot of weeks. It would be a full calendar year of golf. And who cares, because they're paid to play golf. But you basically play every team once. And that develops your season record. It's kind of like a round robin. And then, whatever, you take the top three teams and they play a stroke play. And maybe the quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals, that absorbs the FedEx Cup playoffs. It's no longer the FedEx Cup individual playoffs. It's the FedEx Cup team playoffs. And kind of this way to do what the NBA did is mix in this in-season tournament, these alternate games, and then the regular season is you kind of can do that with the team and individual events. So I'm going to think about it more. I'm going to come back maybe with a better plan with the actual name of the events and what I would like to see in the coming weeks. But from right now, that's my initial plan. And that's what I kind of hope happens. And we will see if it does. But for Drew Buzney on this rainy Thursday morning in Schenectady, New York, I just want to say thank you for listening to Season 2 of the Drew Buzney Show. I'll be with you next week to talk about more sports. Have a great day. Stay safe. Goodbye.